The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Mark Weiss, Senior Software Engineer at Beeswax and also the host of Using Reflection podcast. There's a lot I want to kind of run at. First of all, it's actually really rare that I get someone who's previously or had their own podcast. So, you know, hopefully you won't show me too much on the show, but we'll see how things go. Everyone, and I think it's really unique, and I think technology and people from who've always been champions of technology, with regardless of what aspect, seems to have kind of generated this kind of generation of sharing. I think, you know, we have open source collaboration. I think is, you know, it's such a fantastic thing that is really prevalent in the technical community. And I think doing things like podcasts and blogs, etc., are just kind of an extension of that. And a really powerful tools for me, it was just something to get me into a good discipline, as well as, you know, potentially have the opportunity to meet some really interesting people and chat with some really interesting people. But it's a fascinating time that we're in where, you know, we're really in a much more kind of open and sharing culture. And it's amazing, you know, and you'll know from your experiences how you can just invite people onto the show and the amount of knowledge that you can pick up, you know, from just communicating with people. It's a fantastic time, and I really think that, you know, the technical community has been huge champions of this kind of sharing movement, really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was one of the motivations I had for starting my own show, was just recognizing that I now have some experience. I know a lot of people, all of them have different experiences, and I really enjoy and find fascinating talking to different engineers about their career experiences and also their love of engineering and fascination with engineering. So I felt like there was an opportunity to give back in maybe a more personally focused way than some of the other shows that are out there. I think there's really many really great technical podcasts, and they cover a lot of different topics and technologies and vendors and programming languages and different, you know, all those kind of more technically focused topics. But what I find so interesting really are all the personal interactions with my colleagues and my friends, and keeping in touch with people from, you know, different jobs, and comparing notes about our different experiences of how different tools and engineering ideas are being applied in different industries, you know, the use cases. I find all of that so interesting that I thought having those kinds of conversations would be really fascinating and hopefully valuable to people either looking for different perspectives, new ideas, coming to engineering from a different area, or just starting out in their career. All of those aspects I thought might be helpful and interesting. And I have also, very early in my career, a journalistic background where I did a lot of feature reporting, where you really just start going to interview someone who's particularly good at something. There's some hook, right? They do X, they run this club, they won this award, whatever it might be. And I found it so interesting that each person was so expert in this, at least this one thing, and then I could learn so much from them. So it's a combination of those things.
Yeah. Well, it's a great experience. It's been a fantastic experience for me. So yeah, I mean, I encourage anyone to kind of do it now. I think, you know, the technology that we have, you know, it's, you know, whether you just do it for you, you know, for me personally, you know, we were lucky that, you know, we have people who listen to the show regularly, but you know, for me, I'd have just done it whether no one had listened at all. You know, I just think the experience of the discipline of doing it, learning kind of a new skill, because there is a skill element to actually being able to host the show, believe it or not. I don't know, a lot of people probably listening are thinking, Andy, you still haven't learned how to do that. But
this is you after a lot of learning.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, they're going, yeah, you're a slow learner, Andy. And I'm like, but, you know, all these little things that you can pick up. And I think just conversation in general, I find myself almost as a journalist now when I'm meeting people. I have such a greater thirst for knowledge than I think I've ever had before. So that when I meet new people, they probably hate me now because I just ask them everything. I'm just asking them a million questions because they just, you know, want to learn so much. And you can feel like you're just constantly doing a podcast. But my thirst for knowledge has really increased. And I think that's been one of the most positive things that have come out of doing this, you know, for I suppose for quite a while now.
Yeah, I think it's almost it focuses you in conversation, right? You can become more attuned to something they say that you hear that and think, wow, that's something I could pursue with them, and I bet I could learn a lot, and they could tell me all about that. And it's the kind of thing that you don't necessarily have that perspective or maybe that aptitude sort of as sharply focused until you've been interviewing people, you know? Yeah, because in an interview, it's real time and you have to hear something. And then, I mean, I do it a lot the way you do it. I do take some notes beforehand and I do, so I've been starting to do a little more pre-show kind of work where I'll send questions and do a little pre-show call sometimes. But I tend to want a very natural feeling to what I'm doing and just have it roll along and then edit it later a little bit. And so I am out on a high wire listening to them, and then I need to say something next to keep things going, you know? So there's a little bit of a tension and a little bit of an excitement there. It's a little bit of an adventure. So it does make you focus very sharply on what people are saying and sort of keep a catalog in your mind of, oh, well, I could pick that thread up and I bet we could go somewhere with that. And I think it's probably hard to turn it off when you're at a party or talking to people or whatever, right?
Yeah, it can be surprisingly hard to do so, but I don't think it's a bad habit. I think that in business as well and in my kind of work life, that is such a positive thing because, you know, in all honesty, right, probably one of my biggest downfalls is just not listen. I've kind of turned into more of a strength now. But one of my biggest problems was just listening. I just never listened to anyone, you know. And I think that was just ignorance and probably a level of arrogance as well, being quite young and sure of myself, I suppose, that I, you know, I probably always felt that I knew better, you know, in all honesty. And you look back now and you just think, Jesus, I knew nothing. And I probably wasn't willing to learn. And it really took me a while to get that kind of level of self-awareness up. And then when I started doing the podcast, it kind of, you know, made me even more aware that I still wasn't where I needed to be as far as really listening and taking people's opinion seriously, because it's a strange world. And I think people behave completely irrationally, but, you know, we do make these kind of subconscious judgments and, you know, our selective listeners, I suppose, to a certain extent. So now, you know, for me, a personal goal that I set a couple of years ago was just, you know, to try and do my best. And, you know, you're never going to be perfect at it, but to really listen and try and understand what people are saying and their perspective on things. Because, you know, I think if you, you know, if you trust that people are smart, you know, at the end of the day, that people are smart and everyone has, you know, aspects of what they're talking about that can be, that you can learn from, regardless of how kind of junior or senior they are. You know, you can always learn something, regardless of how big or small it is. And I think that's, you know, a bigger picture that I would never have imagined would have happened from doing something as simple as, you know, a podcast, I suppose. So it's been fascinating.
Yeah, there's a couple things I could think of in response to that. That's very interesting. I think it's the first thing I learned too is, I mean, to be blunt, just to shut up and listen. It was incredible to me, my urge to interrupt people. And I've gotten feedback from a couple of guests, like even one just stopped an interview and said, you know, you keep cutting me off. And I was saying to them, you know, what's funny about that is this is me sitting here, like sitting on my hands, trying so hard not to interrupt, you know, and still I was doing it. And I actually think the two things you said are very connected. And this is sort of a realization I came to. First of all, this notion of thinking you know everything versus being more humble, right? That's to me like the journey. I'm, I think, a little further along in life than you. And honestly, that's my free advice right there. That really is essentially the journey of life. And it will lead to greater and greater effectiveness, in my opinion, really in all aspects of your life, certainly in business interactions. You have to be open and hear other people. And so I actually think the two things are very connected, and you're learning the one from the other, right? For me, at least, the need to interrupt, I realized, was my own ego. And it was my need to sound smart and reiterate what the person had just said and jump in and make my own point about what they had just said. And I had to realize that hosting was about listening and not about me being, it wasn't, you know, it was about the guest and not about me. And so I actually think that things are really connected. And so from interviewing people and forcing yourself to listen, you're learning an aspect of sort of humbleness. Listening is a kind of humbleness, right? Because it's, you're suppressing your own need to interject and you be the center of everything, right? Your own ego be the center of everything. I know I'm getting a little heavy, but I do think it's actually pretty profound. And to your point that it then helps you with the rest of your life and business, I think that's definitely true too, right? People respond well to attentive listeners. They appreciate it. People feel, if you can show them that you really just heard what they said, you didn't interrupt, and then you say the one thing back that really shows that to them, that has a tremendous value in business and I think in the rest of life too.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I think in a business setting, that kind of need to, you know, that ego that is always kind of lingering in the back of your head. And I think everyone has that to a certain extent. I think some people are just more heightened. But in a business setting, it's even more so, and especially probably when you're junior, because you're scrambling to try and prove yourself.
Right.
And I think it's just a kind of a human natural instinct is to kind of be loud and get your point across and all these things that, you know, at the end of the day are completely irrelevant. It's just a conversation, you know. It's about going away and executing that people are impressed by, right? You know, it's, you know, I'm a big golfer. So if I could sit here and say, I'm going to go out and I'm going to shoot 6 under par today and it's going to be amazing. And everyone's like, okay, cool. And then if I went out and shot 2 over, I'd look like a complete fool. So, you know, it's the execution that, you know, really any good boss will appreciate the most. You know, personalities are different. And that's what people appreciate. And I think for whatever reason, there is an element of a culture, I think, in business. And it's more prevalent in certain environments than others, probably, where some people respond well to people who can talk a good game and this and that and the other. And you know, the sad truth is it probably does help accelerate people's careers to a certain extent.
It depends on the place, maybe. But I've learned that lesson the hard way too. I've been in places and in more leadership roles where I thought my job was only to execute, and it turned out a lot of what I should have been doing was communicating to other senior stakeholders what the team was doing and what the team was accomplishing. And it was an interesting lesson to me to see that balance. But I do also think that it depends, like the culture matters. So I think you need sufficient conversation and debate to make sure everyone is heard and to make sure that you've considered various avenues. You'll make mistakes, but at least you've considered avenues and you're choosing among options, and this seems like a good way to go forward and let's move forward. So sufficient conversation to support decisions, but I think it's an anti-pattern if you're spending most or all of your time talking about what you're going to do and being political and presenting yourself and all this sort of thing. At least for me personally, as you say, some people thrive in that environment, and that's why there are different environments and different, you know, different companies, different social groups. But for me, I want a balance where the point of the conversation and the discussion is to lead to a plan of action. And then, as you say, to focus on implementation and action, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what's difficult, isn't it? And I think that's the difficult bit about leadership and management, especially when you're starting off. I think, again, there's misconceptions about what is a right and wrong way. And I think the reason why it's a difficult task and challenge is because there isn't a linear way to do things, you know, and everyone responds differently. So it's a constant attention to detail on the people who you're responsible for in how they, you know, how receptive they are to various styles of management. So that in itself is probably a 5-hour podcast show that you'll probably never uncover. But, you know, I think the thing, the point I would just make about, you know, the ability to listen is, and not to be, you know, egotistical and just bullishly get your points across, is that I can understand why there's a misconception there and why people get that confused with, you know, building an opinion in a structured and considered way that is going to actually get the messages across to people to where they would take it on board and then action it. There's a subtlety there and something that, you know, a lot of people don't have, from my experience.
Yeah, that's a really good and interesting point. I mean, there's a lot there. I think it's very true that you mentioned sort of when you're first starting out in leadership roles, and I've been there, and this is actually something very typical and widely talked about among engineers, which is that you are doing engineering and you show a certain aptitude and a certain ability to communicate effectively to other engineers and to solve problems or see solutions. And then so what happens is you get moved up into some kind of leadership role, and almost never is there any training or mentorship supporting that. Excuse me. And then suddenly you're in this different role where the skills required are so, so different. And I've definitely been there. And, you know, I think I realized that, I mean, I was sort of lucky in a way, because my first role like that was almost a crisis situation. And it was like a turnaround situation where there was a team and a project that were coming up on a hard deadline, fixed price, fixed delivery date deadline, and were quite behind. And the morale was very low. And so in a way, it was actually easier, it was easier to lead, because what I realized is all I needed to do was show tangible improvement to the many issues that the team was facing, and to tell them, look, things are going to get better because I'm running this now. And it wasn't about my ego, it was just to show them that, to focus their hope, right? They needed hope. And so when that's, you know, and so it was easier in that situation because it was more about action, actually, like clearing a bunch of roadblocks and creating enough process and structure so that they were no longer confused about what to do. But I do think that it's true that you get into these situations and you don't really have the skills unless you sort of naturally have them. You don't learn them from engineering. And those skills are largely, as you described, around listening and around communication. The one other thing I wanted to add is, it's very true what you're saying, that it's really hard as a leader to communicate subtly and not to kind of thump your chest, I guess. And I actually, you know, to plug Beeswax, where I'm working right now, where I've been for the last couple of years, I think the one thing I'm really impressed with here is the managers, the senior managers, all the way up to the CEO, I've even spent time thinking about it and tried to pin it down how they even do it, because they inspire us to follow and to be enthused and to execute. And they do so in a way where it still feels very flat, and they still really feel like we all still really feel like we're in it together and we're a group. And yet it's very clear where final decision making comes from, but there's still a lot of good listening and conversation around what are the right choices, and we're all part of the dialogue. And it's amazing that we've maintained that ability and that they maintain that balance where we absolutely respect them. We respect them not for their words, but for their actions. And they don't have to, and they get so much intrinsic motivation from us. And, you know, there's this really good balance of communication. It's kind of, I don't even understand it exactly. And I've been working a long time. So I do think it's true that, you know, this idea that we're kind of, this thread we're pursuing, this idea of that being a good listener and communicating effectively, like, I mean, it's that subtle. Like, you keep at it for years and years and years, and you can keep learning from it and benefiting from it, you know?
I agree. I think, like you say, it's the small things that are made consistent that I think typically have the biggest impact. And like you say, you know, we went on a rabbit hole, as I really enjoy doing a lot on this show, over something as small as just listening.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see like how much can come from that. And the fact that you can have such a discussion, and we could go on for ages and ages down it.
Yeah.
For something as simple.
Feel free
as that.
To change the topic.
No. It's great. And but you know, the point is, it's like something as simple as just listening, the impact. And you know, I look at and think about, you know, the learnings that you have, the education. You know, you can go to a prestigious university and pick up a great skill set, but you know what, your downfall might be something quite as simple as these, you know, I hate using this phrase, but you know, these soft skills that, you know, really can elevate your career to a level that without it you probably wouldn't get to. And I think, you know, it's something that for whatever reason, I don't know whether it is more prominent in engineering, but it seems to be something that engineers, when they come onto the show, really like to talk about quite a lot, is because, you know, I suppose that their whole education and focus for the beginning of their career, you know, I suppose the soft skills aren't part of that as much. And then all of a sudden you get to a fork in the road, or a point of infliction in your career, where, you know, you get to a level of seniority where you have kind of, you have two paths. And unfortunately, you know, the management road probably will pay better in the long run, 9 times out of 10, right? But at that point of infliction, you've then got to pick up this whole new level of skills. And I think it's more of a harsh transition. And this is just from the people who I've had on the show who have been engineers, etc. It seems to be more of a harsh transition for technical people than it does for someone like, you know, what I do in marketing or something, where, you know, those soft skills seem to be a little bit more part of the role from an earlier stage. I'm not sure whether I'm right in saying that, but that certainly seems to be the trend from doing, you know, 200 plus shows that I've done to this point. And I just wonder whether, you know, you look at the recruiting cycle, and even engineers hiring engineers now, are saying that we want people who can articulate their work to maybe non-technical people as like kind of a core requirement, that it needs to be kind of more formalized as part of, you know, their education at an earlier place to really set them up for a better position. Because, you know, let's face it, engineering 15 years ago, for instance, it wasn't the product, you know, that it is now. Now, in many cases, you are the product. You've become kind of the face of the organization in many ways. So that kind of role has kind of evolved to where it's so much more of a necessity now to possess those kind of softer skills.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to your first point that it's challenging for engineers, I definitely think that's true. I think it's maybe a couple reasons. One is, as you mentioned, the training doesn't focus on that at all. And to your later point that that's something that's become more and more valued, is the ability to communicate. And it's more and more necessary because of the centrality of engineering in business now. And it's so much the actual product creation. I think that, you know, the training would benefit from including more communication, perhaps, you know, putting students on teams where they have to build a project and then present it like they were at, you know, presenting it at some Y Combinator type of thing or something like that. Just making them communicate about it would definitely be helpful. But also I wanted to say, I think it's hard for engineers to communicate because, or it's not as natural, not just the training, also your whole focus and point of view when you're doing engineering work is interacting with code and technology, which is not social, and it's not interacting with other people, and the feedback you're getting is not social feedback. And so it's not maybe natural or intuitive to a lot of engineers that it really does matter how you present yourself. Like I described myself making this mistake earlier in my career where I thought my job was only to get the work done, but it turned out a big part of what I should have been doing was advocating for my team, presenting what we were doing socially to the other stakeholders so that they were aware of it. And it was really, and this is because I have an engineering point of view, it was almost, what's the right word, disillusioning to me that that was the case. I thought to myself at the time, why does it matter anything else than we're getting the job done? They gave us a job and we're getting it done. And, you know, from an engineering, from a rational analytical point of view, that's true. It makes no sense. But you have to accept that working is a social, it's a social activity. And therefore, you're going to be judged actually on the impression you make on everyone else. Almost everyone else you interact with isn't going to read your code. And so beyond the fact that it goes, gets shipped and works, they're really largely going to judge you on the impression you make on them, on the social impression. And so communication is crucial. Anyway, I think it's true, everything you're saying, and it is more challenging for engineers than the norm. And maybe the last point to make is, as I said earlier, people get moved into those roles and there isn't a structure generally of training and support and mentoring. And that's something I've talked about in a couple different episodes on my show. And I think it's something that we can all do better going forward. And companies should take note of that and make that part of their, you know, their career track.
Agreed. I'm definitely seeing evidence of that. But there's no question that, you know, it needs to scale up and be a big part of that.
Is that something you guys try to counsel people that you're working with, or do you offer any support like that?
Well, I mean, you know, it's difficult for us to get involved from a consultation perspective, but you know, the opportunity that we do have, of course, the points that we like to make and reiterate. I mean, I guess informally, you know, we like to make these considerations, but you know, we're not consultants to that extent. But, you know, it's something that, you know, we do our best to kind of get the message out about by doing things like this podcast, you know, blogging, you know, communicating, doing these kind of intel reports, you know, that all these things that we kind of do in a kind of unformalized way. Yeah, this is certainly a point that, you know, we like to make as much as possible for sure. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you as well a little bit about ad tech. Interesting one, really, because we've had experiences, you know, our New York guys have said that there's a lot of engineers that, for whatever reason, are really skeptical about getting involved in ad tech. I'm sure this isn't probably news to you. I know you've been in ad tech for a long time. Have you found that to be challenging from a recruitment perspective, the fact that, you know, some of the talent tries to avoid ad tech? For me personally, I've never really understood that, because if there was something that I wasn't in agreement with, or I thought that there was an opportunity to kind of pivot or improve in any sort of way, it'd be the first thing that I'd want to get involved with, you know, to try and influence that. So I'm not quite sure why people kind of avoid it if they have a strong opinion about something, because, you know, get involved and fix things. But there's certainly, from what I'm told and from a few people I've spoken to in ad tech, there seems to be, you know, a skepticism there for technical people to get involved in ad tech firms. And I just wanted to know, like, you know, how much pressure and difficulty that can create at times, you know, potentially getting in the talent that you might want.
Sure. So, I mean, you're setting me up a couple different ways here. So I would say the first thing is, speaking for where I am now, which is at Beeswax, I think we have a fantastic engineering team, and I've had a lot of different jobs if you look on my LinkedIn or whatever, and I really rank this job and this team and this culture really tied for only one other job I've had in my career. It's really an excellent place, and Our founders come from Google and our CTO comes from Google, and we bring a lot of strong experience at running scalable cloud systems and all that, blah, blah, blah. But I've been in the ad tech space since 2010, and so I can also speak to this a couple different ways. So first of all, I mentioned we have a great engineering team here. Our company's growing and we have a lot of challenges ahead of us. So there's that. I think to skeptics, there's a bunch of different things. I could say several different things. One is a lot of every business you're going to be in is going to have issues, and essentially almost all internet companies, and that's almost all companies now, are engaging in a lot of the same kinds of business practices. And so painting a brush over one part of really what's a global economy that is largely operating through the internet, it's relatively, I think, simple way of looking at things. I think you need to look at each individual company and what is their model, what is the alignment of their goals with their customers, what are they doing for their customers, and who are their customers, right? And what positions have they taken about issues you care about, right? And so I think the second point I'd make then is that this bias against ad tech, which I do think exists to some extent, actually helps Beeswax, because if people understand a little better our model, they see that we're good actors in this industry. And I'm now marketing us, obviously, but I believe it. And as I said, I've been in this space 7 years. I've been in four different ad tech companies. I know how ad tech works to some extent. And so I can back that up. We are the first platform where we're buying the ads for people, where we are a SaaS platform. You pay for traffic from us. You pay for just to see bid requests, which are opportunities to buy ads. And so our incentive is to run our platform as inexpensively as possible and give you the greatest efficiency possible as a customer. Every other player in the industry charges their customers a percentage of the cost of the ads they buy. And what that leads to is a lot of practices where those costs are hidden, frankly. And there's been a lot written about that in trades and so on. And so there's mistrust between the customer and the business, and their incentives are misaligned. So I think, you know, we've been deliberately from the very beginning pursuing a model of being well aligned with our customers and being good actors and being transparent. You know, if you look at ad tech, I think we're well positioned to be a leader in terms of concerns people might have. And the last thing I would say to people is, you know, there's really interesting problems and it's a really fun industry. The scale is unprecedented. So if you want to learn the skills of building and operating a cloud-based system at extremely high scale, there's nothing that matches that. There's massive amounts of data. So from a data science and machine learning point of view, there's tremendous opportunity. And also there is less regulation, frankly, and the technology is in some ways, it's built more on unreliable internet technologies versus say a finance where, and open standards, ad tech's built more on open standards. So you have a lot more ability to just use open source tools and, build solutions more quickly and with less encumbrance and less integration pain than in, say, finance. And then there are some similarities to the kind of systems you get to build and the problems you get to solve. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. And, of course, there's a lot of growth, and there's a lot of growth left to happen. And if you're an engineer, growth brings challenges, and it's certainly one thing you should look for is what industries are growing. Spend is moving toward digital. More spend is continuing to move. I think I just read something that $10 billion more was spent in 2017 than 16 in this space. And that was more than 30% growth. And that was maybe the U.S. market. So it has a lot of things going for it, I would say.
I think it's awesome as well, mate. And I think there's an opportunity there as much as anything. I think that, like you say, with the introduction of, GDPR, which I don't believe is the case in the US, right? I don't think applying to the same laws, but
no, but we operate in Europe, and you know, most companies that reach scale operate in Europe, so it's something we of course will comply with. And
either way, like you say, you know, it's still something that everyone kind of has to has to pay attention to, and I think it's a great opportunity. And you know, from everything that I understand from where you guys are at the moment, I think you're really well positioned. And I think, you know, as much as anything, I think it's just really interesting. And at the end of the day, that's what kind of keeps us all ticking, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, right. So to that exact point, and I alluded to it maybe without directly saying it earlier, essentially all internet companies are advertising companies. I mean, this is what's coming out now from the big Facebook brouhaha here in the US, right? It's reached a kind of mainstream consciousness now. I mean, this is how the internet works. Even the New York Times writing these articles critical of Facebook and so on, if you go to the New York Times homepage, the same thing is happening there. And I don't think there's anything, I think it's something that people are more aware of, and I think there's a lot of benefits and trade-offs, and it's great that we're having a conversation about all of that. You know, I mean, so.
Yeah, the irony of that, by the way, the fact that any of these publications are writing about this and at the same time probably running ads as you read about the issues that they have with Facebook running ads.
Right. They're all supported by ads, and we get all these services and all this content and so on supported by ads. And that's the way, largely the way the internet works right now. And it's great that there's more of a conversation about this. And I think it will always be a tremendously valuable model that will support a lot of businesses. And there are probably other models that have, you know, are emerging and will continue to emerge, and that's great too.
Agreed. And you know, like I say, I think it's a great model, a sustainable model. It's just like anything, it, you know, it maybe needs a little bit more regulation, but something that, you know, is really the bulk of it allowed us to have access to the content that's unprecedented, and to learn things, and you know, to kind of pull this conversation 360, you know, allow us to do things like this, allow us to, you know, plug into to iTunes to listen to podcasts, allow us to read whatever online that we pretty much can to get a good fundamental understanding of the things. All that supported by ad tech, realistically, none of it would be there without it. So I'm in full support of it, but obviously just do things, you know, they're in a safe way to where people don't feel like their data is being, you know, misused is kind of the bottom line, really, I suppose. So it's fascinating, and I think everything that you guys are working on it is really, really cool over at Beeswax. So I certainly hope that, you know, we can stay in touch, Mark, and hopefully catch up again soon and see how things are kind of progressing on, because I think from this conversation it'll always be an interesting chat.
Great. I'm glad you thought it went well. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.